Welcome to The Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast presented to you by LSG Media. Well, here we are, Jessica, season 3, episode 4, The Sauna Test. And we dive right back into the action. Things are heating up in Hawkins.
No pun intended.
Yeah, they're getting real hot. A little hot under the collar. Spritzing down that young man's body with a little spray bottle, making him look real nice and chiseled up.
And then make him look real veiny and scary.
Yeah, we dance between sickly sweet, savage, and sexy all at once.
Is that what it is?
No, I don't know. I just like saying things because I'm on a podcast. That's what I do. I just kind of say random shit sometimes.
Illogical stuff?
Mm-hmm. Logic, please. But we got a code red. We had to get our superheroes back together.
Except for Dustin. He's got another mission called hanging out with the cool people.
Yeah. He's going to be a... But I think we're getting to a point now where we're going to have to start bringing everybody together. But overall, what'd you think of the sauna test?
I think that it's a pretty good episode. I think it has some good stuff that goes on and it definitely furthers the plot.
It does.
And like you said, as far as like bringing people together and everything and starting to slowly kind of converge our storylines.
Yes.
So...
Yep. I definitely enjoyed this episode. There was some discussion on the Facebook group. Well, by the way, there's a link to the Facebook group right in the show notes. But there was some discussion on the Facebook group about wondering how I specifically was going to feel about this episode, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if they thought I was going to be watching some weird... I'm not sure. So I was like, oh, I wonder what this is all about. And I don't know. They kind of left that without context. And anytime somebody says something like that, based on what I've been saying for the previous three episodes, I think they're going to think I'm talking about what feels like you know, kind of weak, agenda-driven writing.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe they thought you were going to, were wondering your response to Nancy and Jonathan's conversation.
Jonathan,
how hard it is for Nancy to be a woman.
Jonathan's a queef, first of all.
I hope you never use that word again.
He's a queef.
Wow, I just literally died inside.
Here's why he's a queef. Because he's kind of overselling his contribution to the mortgage with his summer intern job that he probably doesn't get paid for. I think Joyce has that under control, okay?
I think that maybe Jonathan needs to like, oh God, I don't even know. He's real annoying in this episode.
Like, here's the thing though. I don't mind realistic writing. I don't mind a young girl being pushed around by a bunch of, I don't mind, so... The context of everyone in the office is a piece of shit I've talked about. That's kind of almost unrealistic as far as I'm concerned. That aside, if we're going with that as the premise, I don't think it's bad writing for a young girl, a young woman to feel kind of pushed around and cry and express herself. And be like, you don't know how hard it is for me. That's not unrealistic to me. That's how young people that are emotional about shit act, right? That's
sure.
She's not a 40-year-old woman. Like, that's why I don't mind it that much. Yes, we get the point. We understand the point. But that's my point. There's kind of agenda-driven fuckery. And then how would this character behave given the context of the situation? And I think she's behaving how she would behave given the context of the situation. They're both mad. They're both upset. They're not really being there for each other in this moment. They're upset both as individuals. And then they're kind of like, you're not sad for me. And he's like, well, you're not sad for me. Like, so that's not unrealistic to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it also leads into a really good discussion between Nancy and her mom.
I agree.
I think that's a really good moment of real 1986 mother-daughter talk. I think that's really good stuff right there. Now, I think it's good. I think that's a very good scene. That doesn't bother me at all. It makes sense that a daughter... that a mom is looking out for her daughter, that her mom is very aware of the world that they live in 1986.
Is the show actually set in 86? Because every time you say it, I feel like you're wrong.
Okay.
I just wonder. I don't know.
Okay. 84. It's either 86 or 84.
I'm going to Google
it. It's an even number for sure. My point is, Jessica, 84 and 86, it doesn't fucking matter.
I'm just curious.
No, I'm just telling you. It doesn't matter.
I know, but I just want to know.
While you Google that, and we'll put the podcast on hold while you do that.
Well, you were in the middle of talking, so I figured I could look it up.
That's, so anyway, my point is this. Chauvinism exists more in 1986 or 84.
85. split the difference.
Whew, thank God we got that clear.
I was just curious because you say the year wrong every episode. I just wanted to check what year it was.
So the chauvinism exists in 1985. It exists in 1885. It'll exist in 2185. Some people are going to be like that. Some people more than others. And yes, we're seeing it play out a little bit in this episode, of course. But all that bullshit aside, all the everybody, you know, I've said it enough on this podcast. I said it enough last week. I don't think it needs bears repeating here because I didn't see it as blatantly stupid as I have in the past in this season. I found the daughter-mother conversation very well done.
And that's funny too, because I thought that you were going to be snarky about it.
No.
I was shocked when you were like, that was a good scene.
It's a very good scene.
Yeah. I thought you were going to be snarky.
Because the dialogue wasn't dumb. Like, it's so terrible. Men are the worst. You have no idea. Men are such bad people. Like, if they would have gone down that line and said dialogue that people don't say, unless, you know, you're waving a flag in some fucking weird parade somewhere.
Oh my God. What kind of parades are you going to?
Well, I don't know. Ask Matt. He goes to them. But you know what I'm saying. Like, if it would have been one of those, like, blatant, like, it wasn't. It seemed realistic to me. Mom is saying, it's a fucking tough world, okay? It's tough. It's tough for me. It's tough for you. It's tough for a lot of people. It's tough for everybody, okay? Some people have it worse than them. Some people have it better than them. That's life. But my point is this. They're not here waxing philosophical about how tough it is or isn't for certain people. They're talking about themselves, their family. This woman's worried about her daughter.
Right.
And that totally makes sense to me, why mom would be like, finish the story.
Yeah.
That's me supporting you. That's what I can do to support you. That's really cool. And we know, even though it was probably used as like a, what are they going to do in season three? And as buzz around a trailer talk to have Billy flirting with her, there's still that part of like, that did happen. That's not just like a funny part of the show that was used to sell season three as like, isn't this going to be funny when Billy bangs Mrs. Wheeler? The reality is she was entertaining thoughts of Billy, and that's in her when she's talking to her daughter. Like, there's probably a little bit of guilt there. I like that. You know, it's cool. I don't know. I found that was a decent scene. You know, it didn't blatantly piss me off at all. I thought it was realistic that she would talk to her daughter, that she would want her to help her daughter. Her daughter's going through a tough time. She cares about her daughter, and she's supporting her daughter in her endeavors. Mrs. Wheeler isn't someone who's going to be like, well, suck it up, bitch. Hit the bricks. Get to work. You know, she's not like that. Like, that mm-hmm. would be just dumb writing. We know Mrs. Wheeler is a kind and caring person.
Right.
Right?
And you need this scene. It's important because Nancy is so discouraged, you know, after being fired and her conversation with Jonathan, that you need that thing that's going to be the catalyst that pushes her to finish.
Sure.
Her story. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's very important. It's not just like, okay, let's give these two a cute moment because people will be like, oh, so sweet. And like, remember Mrs. Wheeler? She's on the show. Like,
right. The parents outside of Joyce kind of take a back seat in this show anyway.
Yeah.
And since we've already prominently introduced Mrs. Wheeler, or I think her name is Karen, mm-hmm. since we've introduced her, we like, is she just going to be somebody who flirts with a 20-year-old guy? Like, she has to be, she's gotten enough screen time to where maybe she should do something. And I think this is a good moment for her to do something that makes sense in the story.
Yeah,
makes sense in the plot.
Right.
So yeah, it doesn't bother me at all. I think it's totally fine. I guess that's where I'm diving in because that was something that I thought about. And like, I understand Jonathan's mad. I understand Jonathan coming from a single parent probably has a lot of anxiety around money. I did when I was a kid, when I lived with my mom. There's a lot of anxiety around money all the time. So like that part of it I get, but I also think he's... Like getting fired from your internship because
you normally don't get paid for,
correct.
By the way.
And when you know that she was right and you know what you saw in the first place, it seems like he's kind of being a little queefy and panicky.
I hate that you say that word
I'm
every
keep
time.
Saying it.
I think that the problem is like, I don't even think like Jonathan even thinks Nancy's like right or wrong. I think he's just like convinced himself that like he has to like go with, you know, the flow and of what other people say and not go against.
Yeah,
the grain,
like he's a conformer, you mean?
Yeah.
I can dig that.
And I don't like it. I don't like Jonathan. I think he's I think he's one of the worst characters in the show at this
right.
point, to be honest.
I don't think
he's well written.
One thing I do think is realistic here as it relates to all this is that when they get fired and there is an authoritative adult man like saying you fucked up and giving you legitimate reasons as to what's going on, as a kid, you're not going to be like, that guy's totally wrong, unless you're like a weirdo narcissist kid.
Why?
Like,
Nancy says he's totally wrong.
Right. But she does fold a little under the, holy shit, I didn't know she was like a schizophrenic. Yeah. You could tell that affected her, that news. And that was a good performance by the actress. She was like, I didn't know. And you could tell it upset her. Like she cried about it.
Yeah. Cause now she is questioning her decisions.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Because he's an authoritative, like, man in a position of fucking power over them in a job setting.
The thing I love about Nancy too is she still takes from this, and she's like, maybe he's on drugs or something. There's something wrong with him.
Sweating.
Did you see how much she was sweating?
Yep.
And I love that Nancy picked up on that.
For sure. Yeah, because you would expect somebody who's going to be like a rogue journalist to kind of have perception about them. Like they see things other people don't.
He ain't on drugs. You know, he's got something going on.
You know, that's why I know I've been bragging on Jonathan, but there's part of me that understands like there would be a moment of like, fuck, holy shit, we just got in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an adult yelled at them and fired them from their internship. That's kind of scary.
I've never been fired from a job, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of that happening to me, like at age 34, is like devastating. Like I would cry.
Screaming at you and then telling you you're fired.
I like hate to get in trouble and I'm an adult.
So that's my point. Like it's not surprising that they would have been like a little shell-shocked from his reaction up front. But as you said, Nancy sort of quickly recovers and has her wits about her earlier than Jonathan, because we've kind of decided to take a little bit of a different path with Jonathan, apparently, from a writing standpoint.
Her and Jonathan, when they're just like, she's like, you don't know me. And he's like, you don't know me. And I'm like, literally, they are a terrible couple. Like, break up and go your separate ways. And like, let's all move on.
The you don't know me, you don't know me thing, though, that's such young people
bullshit.
We
don't need that.
Yeah.
In this show. We don't care about Nancy and Jonathan anymore. They were a cute thing in season one. We have all moved on.
Wow.
As should they.
Damn, player.
You but if they were more interested, sweetheart.
I'm in the same boat as you, but I probably wouldn't be if they would have been more interesting at the start of season three. They've just kind of, it just sort of exists like adjacently, you know?
And that's because it's like this thing in like television shows where like when you, so season one, we want Jonathan and Nancy to be together so badly, and then they get together and then you're like, well, now what? I'm bored.
Unrequited love is more
interesting.
Are they just
going to sit around and just be together and sometimes fight about stupid shit? Like, you know what I mean? There's nothing you can really do with that.
You know what's funny about that? This goes back to what we were saying in the first couple episodes, which is the idea that, you know, without conflict, you can't really have good drama.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're just a happy couple, what's the conflict, you know? Yeah, right. I was hoping they would have galvanized around a shared conflict, which they still might. We're halfway through the season, right? That's four more episodes.
I don't know how many episodes there are.
There's eight.
Oh.
So I'm not quite sure. I'm almost positive about that. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen when they move on from here. But it's interesting to see the stressor and what it does to them versus the stressor and what it does to Mike and Al, right? Almost, you know, it's funny. We were saying earlier, like, as you get older, you can manage your relationships a little bit better. And it's funny to see the kids, like, it's almost like the stress has pushed Mike and Eleven back together. And I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I do want to talk about that aspect of that when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple other things I want to get to today. Obviously, we got, why did I write Heather's parents? Oh, Heather's parents, of course.
Who's Heather?
The lifeguard. Oh. Ellen Max, Hopper Joyce, the Code Red, Larry Klein, that whole thing, the air duct. Lucas's sister's name?
Erica.
Thank you.
Because you can't spell America without Erica. What's wrong with you?
Erica. And then you have the whole hiding in plain sight ending, which I love. But what do you want to talk about next?
Let's see. We talked about Nancy and Jonathan. So I guess let's talk about Heather, as you call her, her parents and their situation, which is dire.
Well, that's our opening incident, basically. Pre-credit sequence, as it were.
As it were.
Pretty awesome. I love this kind of shit.
Yes.
Again, it's interesting to see, I guess, the return of the Mind Flayer.
So it seems. Now he's making a little army instead of just having one little friend.
I like the idea of him making an army. Again, making an army that hides in plain sight. And I wonder, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the whole Russian subplot, because there's no way the Russians have any control or say over what the Mind Flayer does or doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is we might see unlikely allies with the Russians at some point. So I'm curious about how that's going to go, because I don't think they created and or have control of the Mind Flayer. Maybe their meddling helped create the upside down. I think that has a lot to do with the Hawkins lab too, based on what we've seen already. So I'm wondering what their stake in this whole thing is and how it's going to eventually play out, because I don't think the Mind Flayer is going to spare Russian operatives when it comes to its motivations, which seems to be controlling people.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to care like what people, honestly. I like the opening scene, obviously, like with the Mind Flayer in return, because I like the reaction of both of her parents to the situation.
Yes.
Like, because they don't know what's going on, and like, this is their daughter, and just them talking to her and begging her, and they're like, we don't know what he has you into. They're probably thinking she's on fucking drugs or something.
Absolutely.
And especially the mother, the way she talks to her and like is begging her, you know, her child.
Sure. That's tough.
And for her child to then walk away, but then it's like, oh, here's a giant monster.
Yeah. Don't move too much.
Also awkward. So I like that. It was very real, like good acting from the two of them. It was like a very realistic moment of these people being like, oh my God, like this is our child.
Right.
Like not understanding that it's not her anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's always, again, it's almost like an extension of last week's great closing scene, which is just this idea of the people you love and trust, you know, most in this world, parents and children and stuff like that, are sacrificing you, so to speak, to this monster.
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely implacable. Like they won't listen. They're mm-hmm. just going about their duties stone faced. That's super terrifying to me.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's, again, it's like the Cylons, like, you don't know who.
Matt, yeah, exactly. Could be your brother, right? You don't know.
Could be everybody.
But it's cool. I like it. I think I like this idea. I also found it interesting, you know, I know we're kind of jumping ahead here, but in talking about hiding in plain sight, Cylons, when they were pulling back at the end of the episode, revealing all the people, it kind of reminded me of the walk through Westworld when you.
It's literally what I was going to say. Same thing,
right?
It was just like Westworld,
just like the Westworld shot of all the
hosts.
Thank you. Kind of standing there, pretty wild.
Very much, very, very much felt like a Westworld type scene. It is
indeed.
A very similar idea. It was a good closing scene too.
Right.
I think,
and it's creepy because you know, unlike the hosts. These people all seem to be controlled by one force that's clearly malevolent and has it out for the people of Hawkins for whatever reason that is. Maybe just to cause death and pain. Not sure. Could be some kind of demon.
Maybe it just likes to cause death and pain.
It's possible.
Which is rude, but
yeah, very
it's
rude.
Do what it's got to do.
Rude might be underselling it, but sure.
Just rude.
Yes. Ted Bundy, very rude.
Yeah, he was actually polite, I think.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right before he hits you in the face with a sledgehammer?
Yeah, but I mean, he was just doing that to cause your death.
That's all.
Not to upset you.
He was just simply trying to murder you. He wasn't trying to make you cry.
No, he just wanted you to be dead.
Except
he wanted
when
to charm you by saying, oh, I lost my dog.
Except while you were crying as he strangled you to death. And then you get hypoxia in your eyes. That's nice, huh?
Ew.
And then you shit and piss your pants as you die as he strangles you to death. Isn't
I mean, not necessarily
isn't he charming?
If you didn't have to Ooh,
what
go to
a
the bathroom.
What a charming fellow.
Yeah, he's pretty charming.
Okay.
Well, serial killers are, you know?
No, they're not. That's a misconception. They're and all of them like, bleh, 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 like that.
Those aren't serial killers.
No, they are. I've seen many interviews with them on
like
dumb
Henry
shows.
Lee
you
Lucas,
like.
An Oddest Tool.
You know who's a serial killer? Mind Flayer.
No, a serial killer? You.
Actually, has he killed many people, the Mind Flayer? How many?
I mean, he killed Barb.
Poor Barb.
And we still care about her.
More or less.
I mean, I do.
Yeah.
And some people died because of him.
It's true.
Like Bob Newby.
It's true. Bob and Barb.
A lot of bees. Really concerning, actually.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Are there any bees in the show left?
All dead.
Maybe the Mind Flayer is moving on to the seas next.
I got to start. Now I'm like, I forgot everybody's name in the show.
If he's moving on to the seas, he's going to be hitting Jonathan soon. Know what I mean?
Whoa.
See you next Tuesday. Well,
whoa.
Mind Flayer aside, Joyce's parents aside, we know they're in the fold.
Joyce's parents?
Whatever. In the grip of the Mind Flayer. What would you like to get to now?
Let's see. What else do we got on the list? Shall we talk about Joyce and Hopper's adventures?
I think we should.
Okay.
Yes, I think we should.
Let us.
You've been upset with Hopper as of late. How do you feel about him this week?
This episode was fine for me. There was nothing that I thought was like egregious. Like, honestly, including him, you know, beating up Carrie Elwes. That felt on brand for me.
For sure.
It didn't feel over the top because I feel like that's something he does, like intimidation wise. And in this episode, you know, the fact that he was thinking and he was on the same page as, mm-hmm. as,
Joyce.
What's wrong with me? I almost called her Nancy. That he's on the same page as Joyce.
Hold on, let me do what you do. Joyce, God, what's wrong with you?
Thank you.
There you go.
I like that he was on the same page as far as like, she's concerned. She's got the motorcycle like license plate. And he's like, Joyce, we're never going to find this. But then when he realizes it's a motorcycle, like it connects. And now he's on the case with Joyce as opposed to like being against her.
Correct.
And so I like that.
Right. I do too.
That to me is very much more like the Hopper that I would like to see.
Absolutely.
I feel like in the other episodes, they were really, really going over the top. And yeah, him beating the shit out of, you know, Carrie Ellis, Larry Klein, whatever, is a lot. But it also felt in character for Hopper on my end.
It's nice to see Hopper doing police work and not, like you just said, not just being adversarial or against her, but also not seeing things. Like, mm-hmm. we know he's perceptive. We know he notices things. We know he finds leads that go to clues that get him to where he needs to be there. And it's good to see that again. It's good to see him responding to something she might, like finishing her sentence for her. Like, yes. They're on the same page. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot in this episode. And yes, he beats the hell out of Larry Klein, which is really funny, by the way. But he had he had his hunch, a very strong hunch, and he knew what was going on. And I like that. I also like when they bust out the Hawkins map, they walk over the map. She recounts her discussion with Clark about what if, you know, Southeast Hawkins, it's near Southeast Hawkins. How about the Hess Farm? Hess Farm is near the Jordan Lake. What's Jordan Lake next to? Oh, that's next to the power plant. Wait a minute. What if one of those machines is hiding in one of these properties, one of these big, big properties that has all this room? And he's right there. He's like, yes, absolutely, for sure, yes. So we know that's going to be their next lead.
It's been a turnaround from him not being interested at all in what she's been saying.
Right.
To them being working together.
Getting your head kicked in. Gets you motivated, I guess.
Apparently. That's all you need to do is be beat up by some Russians.
But they continue to be awesome. They continue to have great chemistry.
They really do. And again, this is something where Nancy and Jonathan, you were like, oh, I love them so much. I want them to be together. And then they got together and now we like hate them. The show is done so right by like Hopper and Joyce in not putting them together, but still always giving them this relationship and this chemistry where they're so great to watch on your screen together. They're great together.
For sure. Yep. I agree with that. Speaking of motivated, let's talk about Will.
Oh, I liked Will this episode.
Will's doing shit.
I was a big Will fan this episode.
Yeah. I like that he sort of explained how he felt. I like that moment between him and Lucas when Lucas is like, hey, I'm really sorry. He's trying to just apologize and be a good kid. And he's like, no, it's dumb. We have other things to worry about now. So I wonder if this is kind of a turning point for Will. I think the destruction of Castle, whatever he called it.
Fires.
Was a cathartic sort of growth moment for him as a kid. Mm-hmm. My hope is they return. Once everything gets back to normal, they return to their fun. We'll see. But I think it is important for him to kind of step out of himself for a minute and think of the bigger picture, which is what he's doing, right?
Right.
It's giving him a direction it's giving him agency.
Yes. There's something sad about this to me.
Go for it.
Which I don't even know if... So... In this moment where Lucas is like, oh, the game, this, like, I'm sorry. And Will's basically like, we have bigger things to worry about. Mm-hmm. There's this part of me that is like, the only time in this series we've seen Will like truly be like a part of this group is when this horrible shit is going on.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And that's like sad to me where it's like, oh, shit hit the fan again. The Mind Flayer's back. Like now Will's got his friends back. And like, that's sad.
I see what you're saying.
You know, like, yes. It makes me sad. Where Will's sitting in this moment, and he's, like, working with these people, and they're working together. You know, they're all friends. It's the group. But is they're this part of Will that's, like, this is the only way that these people are really in my life, is, like, this major tragedy. And, like, it's, like, it made me a little sad for him.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like... to a much lesser extent what you hear about with people returning from like overseas in the military, where they're like, they had such purpose and direction.
or even people getting out of prison.
Yeah.
To be honest.
But more like working together, to your point.
Yeah.
Like, we have this common goal. We share this thing no one can ever understand. Mm-hmm. No one will ever understand the bond we have because of the shit we've been through. Mm-hmm. And then it's all like, okay, everyone go back to your life now. It's over.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. That void, trying to fill that void is weird. And it is. I didn't even think about it that way, but it's almost like Will is now going to become accustomed to, you know, chaos in almost... There'll be a weird part of him that likes it, you know, right? Like a normalcy in it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing. That's the only other normalcy for him, isn't it? Other than, you know, his D&D campaigns is like actually dealing with the shit.
Yeah, based on what we've seen.
But I like Will being involved, being a part of this. I like him saying, okay, I know this is back. This is why. This is what happened. This is what he did to me. This is the information that I can give to help, you know, about how... It likes to be cold
and
everything. And this was like the best Will episode where like Will was really driving the action for all of them. Like, he was the one who was like, we have to do this. This is what's happening.
I agree.
And they do all come together, which I like.
Under the code red, right?
Yeah. And I liked it. I just liked it for Will. I liked this episode for Will.
Me too. It was a good Will episode. Before we talk about the code red and kind of getting them all together, which leads to the titular moment in the episode, which is the sauna tests. Mm-hmm. Do you want to pivot off of them and go over to the ice cream parlor?
Yeah, we can do that.
And then we'll L and Max our way to Code Red.
Whoa.
How do you like that?
Yeah.
Not bad, huh? L and Max is now, L and Maxing is a verb.
Wow, who knew?
So talk to me about this scene.
I still love Steve Harrington. I love this group. I do.
Me too.
They're so much fun to watch. Because the stakes are very high, and it's like sometimes you don't even realize how high, and they still are just like, we are going to go into this full force. And Erica is a little like over the top, but I like Erica.
She's a kid.
I like her.
Me too.
And I know, like, obviously in season two, everyone fucking loved Erica because like two times she told like Lucas to shut up, and people were like, ah, Erica, what a queen. And the show was like, we hear you. Let's bring her in. And it's... But they don't bring her in through Lucas, which I also like.
Me too.
That she gets involved with these guys for whatever reason. Well, I obviously work at the ice cream parlor, but I like that that's how they managed to bring her into the group. That she's, it's not like Lucas is like, okay, kid sister, come do this thing. She's doing this totally separately of him.
Right.
I like that. I like her attitude. I think that she also works well in this like little group.
Me too. I think she's great. I like the idea of Erica being in this group because of her attitude.
Yes.
Because they know she won't be afraid. Because they know she won't be a blabbermouth.
Right.
Like, they just know has a way about her.
Right.
They can tell that right away. They're a lot older than her.
Yep.
And when they realize they're not going to fit, this kid thinks he's Tombs, I guess. Like, he's going to just cruise through that thing and murder people and eat their liver.
Yep. Probably about right.
Not quite Tombs-like, though, despite whatever his disease is. But yeah, they're like, well, also, it's weird to see Dustin's hairy legs.
I know.
Hairy man legs.
It actually, like, really bothered me. I'm glad that you said that because, like, I watch it and, like, bothers me. I'm like, he looks too old. Like, the legs look too old for his body. Like, I can't.
Pretty soon, he'll have legs dangling out of the thing with varicose veins and shit. Yeah. They'll be so old.
I'm like, okay. Like, obviously, like, Steve's, like, 18 or whatever. He can have hairy legs. And I'm like, I can't have Dustin have hairy legs. It's too much for me. It's too much.
But, And it's nice, you know. This is, again, one of the things I like about the show is you always know that they know where it's going. When they start writing it, they know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that because they establish the ice cream and how she wants all the ice cream and she loves the ice cream. And of course, they're going to eventually bribe her with the ice cream to get her to do this thing. It's just well structured.
And it's like the simplest thing, but it is.
Right.
Like, you know, it's just this thing where it's like, oh, comedic relief. It's just something to remind you that they're working at their job, but it actually isn't. It's something that is going to come back and play.
It's both.
A part.
For sure. Yeah.
And I like this group and like the way they think and work differently. And like, I love Robin. I love her.
Me too. She's good.
I love that she's like, okay, gotta go. And she takes all the money and she's not like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. She's just like, bye, gotta go do it. And then she's like, brilliant. Like, mm-hmm. She's so smart.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
She's just a fantastic, fantastic character. And she plays so well off Steve and Dustin, and they're such a, and Erica, it's such a good group. They're just so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's like, they're doing these incredibly dangerous, insane things, but it's so lighthearted and just like it's perfect.
And you know what else works for them? They're so like, you know, Mike, Will, and Lucas are very similar. Mm-hmm. They're all very different.
Very.
Steve is very different from Dustin, who's different from Robin, who's different from Steve.
Very much.
And then
much.
Eric is like the X factor.
Very much.
And I think that, and that can sometimes yield disastrous results, but it doesn't in this case. Their dynamic grouping makes them interesting in this case. And I like it, you know, and it's funny because at first you have, you know, it's interesting to watch the way this plays out almost hierarchical, where it's like, okay, you have Steve and Dustin, mm-hmm. then Robin's the outsider. Then you have the three of them. Now Erica's the outsider. Like even the way they're shooting this.
Yeah.
They're like the three of them are all have their arms crossed and standing opposed from them is Erica.
Right.
Right. It's cool. Like we see the addition of people into the group then.
It's just like when Robin said she would be able to figure out how to speak Russian because she spoke a bunch of languages. You went from, you're exactly right.
Yeah. Yep. It's interesting.
It's very well done. It's smart. I just love that they're doing this. It's crazy. Here's Robin. She works with Steve. They like are bros or what, hanging out, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she's like, yep, I'm going to go get these Russian spies with you. Cool. Like, it's like almost like this fun thing.
It's like Scooby-Doo shit.
Yeah. And it is. And it's again, like, it's almost like they don't realize how high the stakes are. And like, we know the stakes are high and they're even seeing like the guns and all this stuff. And they still are like, let's keep going.
I think that's what keeps the show thematically on point. Mm-hmm. Is they're not freaking out. They're not calling the cops. They're not going, we need the FBI down here. Like, it's not that kind of show. Mm-hmm. You know, Stranger Things is a light with some dark moments show about, you know, Stranger Things are happening. That's all it is. And if it gets, like you said, the stakes are high, but only so high because we're dealing with children and we're not going to watch a kid get fucking gunned down by a Kalashnikov. That's just not going to happen. I would be shocked if it does. Now, there are still cool moments that cool from a writing standpoint, bad if your name is Bob. But you know what I mean? You still have these dark
moments.
Or
Barb.
Yeah, you still have dark moments that remind you that there is dangers lurking in the shadows.
And so much with Will.
Right. But overall, you're still dealing with a show that wants to stay kind of lighthearted in a sense.
Yeah.
With the interactions between all the kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
While navigating their adolescence, so to speak.
Yeah.
But
sure.
The only thing that doesn't make sense is I don't know how the air duct moves in that room if it's an elevator, right? It wouldn't work. If you have a horizontal, like if you have one coming in the sidewall and the room's an elevator, I don't think there would be a duct in the room. It'd be in the ceiling. But I don't know. What do I know? Well, I'm not a structural engineer.
I don't think that's pretty nitpicky.
Just saying. It's nitpicky except the room's an elevator and the whole way in was through the fucking thing.
But it might be like it might in that on that floor, there's the air duct there that goes to it. And then they made it into an elevator and then it just goes down.
And the air duct just moves and then reconnects when it comes back? Okay.
Why not?
Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
I hope Elton McManus listens to this because he's a lift engineer. They call them lift engineers.
That's crazy. I don't like elevators. So I'd be very scared if I was in this and this happened to me.
No.
I also love Erica when she's like, they're talking about booby traps. And I'm like, are there any booby traps? And she's like, if there were booby traps that I knew, they would not be good booby traps.
Shit like, traps, she says, all right?
Oh my gosh, she's fun. Yeah, she is an entertaining human. She's a good little group addition. I like it. They're my favorite group. They just are.
But again, we see this. This is another thing Stranger Things is good at from a plot structure standpoint is the gradual peeling away of the onion. They never give you everything in one shot. Like when you open the box, we know we're not going to get the answer. We're going to get the feeling of, ooh, what's this? Which will be answered in the future. Right? That's like the Stranger Things formula.
Yes.
Right?
I do want to call it. I love that moment where like Steve's like, sit back. And Dustin's like, no. And he's like, if you die, I die. And Steve's just like, okay. Like, whatever. Like, it's so funny. Like, Steve is so, and like this macho, like the two guys, like, and they're both so not macho. It's so cute. Yeah. I love it. Remember when Steve was macho?
He thought he was.
He's come a long way.
He thought he was. Why? Is macho bad?
No. But well, Steve season one was a problem.
He was a prick.
I still have that meme on my phone when it's like, it's like a picture of Steve Harrington with like flowers when he's going to see Nancy and like the caption's like, I'm sorry, I love you. And it's like me when I see Steve's character arc in season two.
Oh my
God. That's literally me. I actually think Megan Garrett Denon now, because she's married, listener of the podcast, sent me that gif originally.
But so they gain access to some crazy glowing green, looks like belongs in an Avengers movie stuff. And I have no idea what that is, but at least they gained access.
And right? Now they're in an elevator and who knows where they're going.
Right.
Are you worried for our heroes?
Not entirely. It's Stranger Things after all. But I'm intrigued. So it's funny you asked me that because it brings up a point versus am I worried? If I'm not going to worry about all my main characters getting killed because they're children, and then there's the, well, if I'm not going to worry about it, at least I need to be intrigued, and I'm always intrigued by Stranger Things. Like, I always think they do a good job of like, ooh, interesting. What's next?
I almost
ooh.
Want a kid to die now just to show you.
Oh, you would. That's
stakes are high.
Classic woman.
They get to the bottom of the elevator, the door opens, they just shoot Dustin in the face. And I'm like, ooh, this is awkward.
Fucking brains all over the elevator
They're
wall.
They're like, he's growing too fast. We have to cut him.
Oh, no. Fucking sees wailing.
Yeah.
Holding him and his head looks like a goddamn broken
watermelon. Oh my God,
watermelon.
Yeah, legit, like holding him in his arms. It's like that classic scene of like the person like gets gunned down and dies and you hold him and you throw your head up and scream.
Yes.
It's like on 90210, like when
Luke
Perry's wife died.
That classic.
She got gunned down.
That classic gun him down show. What the fuck?
I don't know why. I just listened to a podcast about Beverly Hills 90210.
That show where they're always gunning him down.
No, there wasn't.
Not like episode. The Walking Dead.
There's an episode where Dylan McKay's wife got shot and then he held her body in his arms and he yelled up at the sky.
Okay.
And then he left the show.
Of course he did.
And then he left the show.
At least it's not melodramatic.
90210 was a fucking classic time, okay?
Well, anyway.
Guys, if you know that reference, message me. We'll talk.
I know what's I don't know what's going on, but I'm intrigued to know what's going on. And it was cool. I like that scene. I like that they accomplished something. I'm sure it gave them a renewed confidence and vigor as a team, as a unit. And now they're going down into the depths
of
wherever.
But now they're scared, I think.
I think so,
except maybe Erica. I don't know if she's ever scared.
Well,
Erica's probably just like, I wish I would have eaten more ice cream before I got in this elevator.
Before a Russian guns us down.
Mm-hmm.
I like that moment where the door opens and she's like, free ice cream for life. Shouts at them up on the roof.
Yeah, she's something. She's funny. She's sassy.
Sassy pants.
I like that. You know, the Duffer brothers in the show as a whole, like, understands, like, what the show wants, I feel like. Like what the viewers want. They do.
But you it is be careful
but it's not
that.
It's not too fan servicey, I don't think, at this point.
Gotta be careful with that.
But that, for certainly, Erica, who had three scenes and was a beloved last season, they were like, what do we do to bring her in? I think this was the correct choice as opposed to her being brought in via Lucas.
Yep.
Because she's doing her own thing and I like it.
I agree with that.
So.
Assessment. I think it's a good assessment.
Thank you. It was.
Let me erase this line right here. This is Jonathan's being a queef. That's been covered.
Wow. You wrote that down on a piece of paper?
Yeah.
That's a horrible word. I don't like it.
No.
It makes me uncomfortable.
I'm running out of words, so that's the one I used.
I would not like that anymore. Good day.
Elle and Max.
They're just hanging out.
Elle and Max.
Having some sleepovers.
Guess so.
And Max is like, thank God Billy is not a serial killer. And Elle's like, oh.
Psych.
But is he?
What the hell was that?
That's what she said.
Is he?
Yeah, that's it.
I can't
it.
Do it as high as you did it.
That's because I'm a girl.
No, there's no difference between us.
There is.
Oh, whatever.
Biologically.
Unbelievable.
Anyway.
How dare you oppress me on my own show.
Anyway, you can be whatever you want to be.
All right, thank you. That's more like it. So anyway. Elle and Max having sleepovers, learning about Wonder Woman.
So cute. I love it. I love that because Elle is like Wonder Woman, basically. She's amazing and very powerful. So there's that. And again, still like Elle and Max is hanging out, like Elle having a girlfriend. Like I'm supportive of this storyline that is very true to a kid of her age.
I agree.
And I like Max.
I do too.
Max was so good in this. This was a great Max episode too. She was fantastic.
I think it's important to note that I don't think we've spent enough time sort of praising the direction of Max.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been sort of praising the direction of Elle through Max, but I think it's important to recognize Max as her own character too. And
right.
You're right. You know, she was somebody, again, she was facing the uphill battle of being added to the group late.
Mm-hmm.
And she's fit in fine.
Yes.
And not just as a, I'm going to fit in as a tag along, but I'm going to enter the group and do things in the group, especially kind of important things at a critical moment in their development from children to young adults. Mm-hmm. And it's cool that she's there for her friend. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I do like that. And then you have the added pressure of, you know, she has this, you would not say good brother, but it's her brother.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of complicated emotion there. And that's hard to do.
Exactly.
Especially for kids.
Very, very difficult. And it is clearly that way because she talks a lot of shit about Billy. Mm-hmm. But then she's like, thank God he's not a murderer. Like that would have sucked.
Sure.
And at the same time, when they're like, something is wrong, we need to do this thing about this. And Max is like, do it. But it's so emotionally complicated for her because exactly like you said, he's shitty and he's not been a good brother, but he's still her family.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
absolutely.
Her having to go through that struggle and obviously not wanting Billy to be the mind flayer, but at the same time being like, I'm going to do this thing and just watching how hard it is for her when he's in the room and he's like manipulating her.
Of course.
That is such a good scene.
Great scene.
Zachary Montgomery is a good actor.
Yes, I want to talk about him. He had a tough script this week.
He was great in that scene.
Yeah, that's a tough script.
He was fantastic. That was a lot of emotions and a huge range of emotions that he has to go through.
Rage and shit.
In that, or when he's sad and he's crying and he's like, it's not my fault. That when the scene of him in the sauna, like when he's talking to Max and just how he goes from like rage to this sadness, this like vulnerable like place, like back to the anger.
Yep.
He did such a good job of it. It was very impressive.
Yes.
Honestly.
So yeah, I mean, the Code Red scene is fucking amazing. And you're right. It's a lot of good stuff out of that young man who plays Billy. But it's, I don't know. It's really well-staged action too. A lot happens.
Yes.
The whole plan to lure him in there, but the whole plan surrounding it, getting everyone together, everyone doing their part, them falling through a group as a team. Again, like you said, Will having the sense of purpose again in the mm-hmm. chaos. And Mike sort of stepping up and being like, we need to do like, suddenly we get old Mike for a minute.
Yes.
Right?
For sure.
And I like that. And they have this whole plan where they're going to lure Billy into this sauna and it's great. I like
it. It's a really good plan, honestly, based on what they know through Will.
Correct. Yes. Again, with the Will. So they lock him in a sauna because we know the Mind Flayer likes to stay cold. That's been established. Mm-hmm. And it's good that, I mean, what a perfect opportunity. He works at a pool. We know there's going to be a sauna at this club. Beautiful.
Are there normally saunas at pools?
Probably back in the day. They were almost a little more fancy back in the day.
One time I went into a sauna, it was very hot.
Yes, they are very hot.
It was weird.
They were saying I think Will was saying they were getting it up to 220. Which seems hot. That's boiling.
I think they were trying to make it hot, extra hot.
Yeah. But awesome. It was awesome to get him in there. And then it's interesting to watch, you know, because one of the things Will says in this episode is he essentially is describing the sleeper cell agent, right? He's describing the sleeper Cylon. He's saying he only uses you when he needs you.
Correct.
Which means you sort of have free will, so to speak, until the switch.
Like you're yourself to a degree.
Correct. That's basically what Will said. Mm-hmm. So it's funny to see Billy being like, you fuckers, the pill's closed. Like he's pissed off all the time. He's just an angry kid.
Just how he normally is.
Not how he normally is. And then he's like, I'm going to bust their ass. And then he, again, they lure him into the sauna. They lock it. And then when he sees everybody, he must be like, what's going on? But that's the moment where the monster probably starts to panic a little.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. 100%. I'm very bothered by the fact that he, while still wet, puts pants on.
It's pretty
brutal.
Does
that bother anybody else? Because it literally bothers me a lot.
And he 1,000% is freeballing it.
He literally just put on a pair of pants over his wet body.
Over his wet junk, man.
Who does that?
Savages.
I didn't like that at
Maybe
all.
He was in a hurry and he was like, oh, I got to bust these kids. I got to put something on my dick, my jeans. I put my jeans over my dick.
Were they jeans too? That makes it even worse. I don't understand jeans. How people put on jeans and no underwear. It really bothers
me. He's Billy.
Me.
What do you think they're going to be?
I don't know. I don't know what Billy's pants wear. I hate Billy.
You never wore jeans without underwear. You're above it.
Literally never.
Never in your life.
Never. No.
What?
Unless I had to because I was desperate for some reason, which I never
had. I go to the changing room without underwear and change into jeans all the time. I try them all on. Underwear-less.
That's disgusting.
And I put them back on the rack.
Well, you can never shop at a store again, so that's unfortunate.
I'm totally joking, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
But man, watching the intensity in which I was nervous Billy was going to off himself when he grabbed that sharp object and he put it in his hand. I was like, oh, he's going to kill himself.
Because do you believe him when he was crying?
Yeah.
Or did you think he was being manipulative?
I think he's being manipulated.
No, now you do. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But at the time when he was crying, did you think it was like really Billy or do you think it was manipulation?
I think Billy is receiving signals to do anything he can to get out of the sauna because that's what the monster wants. Mm-hmm. So Billy's doing anything he can to get out.
Exactly. So it wasn't genuine. That's what I was just wondering if you thought it was genuine.
No, I don't think it's either or. I think there's genuine feeling there that he's using to his advantage.
Manipulative.
Yes, mm-hmm. For sure. Don't let a good tragedy go unused or something. That famous politician line. Can't remember who said it. Yeah, don't let a good tragedy go unused.
To be fair, it's fair.
That's what they do.
It's fair.
But yeah, this scene is excellent. The flashing lights. This is cut against Nancy continuing under mom's advice and mom's encouragement.
Nancy Driscoll.
Yep, continue Nancy Driscoll. I'm her granddaughter. She heads into the hospital. And we see this interconnectivity, which is this right here, this moment with Billy freaking out and Mrs. Driscoll freaking out is going to mean something at the end, I think. I think this shared stress will help us root out who is who and who is not who. Mm-hmm. Because it's interesting to see that as the mind flayer faces the stress of dealing with the sauna and L, and we see it affecting Driscoll and Billy simultaneously. So that makes me wonder, is it affecting Heather at the same time, somewhere wherever she is and whatever, and whoever else has been.
And Heather's daddy.
Fallen under the corruption of this. Like, yes, he's sitting in the bathtub right now going, as he tries to scrub.
Is that what he was doing during maybe, this
what
time?
If he, what, I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. Maybe he's sleeping. Maybe he's mowing the lawn. He's
That's weird.
Probably not at night, though.
Probably not. I hope not.
But I'll tell you, it's. I think this will come back. Showing it happened simultaneously will be something, and that just seems logical to me. Not super. Nothing special. Especially astute. Mm-hmm. But I like when they're like, "No way, can you get through that, Lucas?" And then just smashes it. And holy fuck, him and Eleven have quite the showdown.
Seriously.
And we see how powerful the Mind Flayer is. By the way, the person getting their fucking ass whooped this whole time is Billy. His body's just getting abused by everyone, mm-hmm. which is interesting. But it's cool to watch. The floating was awesome. Elle really going double nosebleeds. She's never had a double leaker.
She probably has.
I haven't seen a double leaker in
the
show.
What about when she closed the gate?
Single leaker.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think she's going double leaks right now, babe.
It shows how very powerful she is, but also, like you said, how powerful the Mind Flayer is.
Right, because we see
there's a close fight.
Each time there's an elevation, you know, she's like, whoa, and then he's like, holy shit. Then she's like, whoa, holy even more shit. And then he gets whacked in the back of the head by her, by Mike, actually. So he steps up in that moment.
Something about the scene, and it's like when you're watching it and he's choking Eleven and you watch the kids just standing there and you're
frozen.
Like, do something. But it's so realistic.
Absolutely.
They're fucking frozen in fear. They're not like Eleven. They don't have powers. They are normal fucking kids.
Right.
And them standing there fucking terrified, watching their friend be essentially killed in front of them.
Attempted, anyway.
It was very much of such a believable reaction.
Absolutely.
And it was also a believable reaction that Mike was the one who eventually did something because of the romantic feelings he has for Al. That he would, you know.
Yeah, yes.
He's the one to make the move.
Yeah, and he's typically the man of action in that group.
This is true also.
But yeah, you're right. It is a powerful moment. I mean, him getting slammed through the wall of the building and then he gets up kind of weird. I like the way he gets up almost like a jackknife. And then he just hobbles off into the night. And we get him on the stairwell and we get that great shot. Again, that Westworld shout out of everyone just sort of standing still. I was kind of hoping they were going to reveal like somebody in the town we'd seen before. That'd be cool. I'm like, ooh, shit, that person's bad.
It's interesting too because of what she says to Billy where like he was like, oh, she was going to kill me or whatever. And she's like, but it's okay because they can't kill all of us. Or they can't kill us.
Yes.
Like, basically, like, your body and you as a human no longer matters. What matters is the whole mindset of everybody. Mm-hmm. So Billy can die and that's fine because there's still all of the rest of them.
Yes, that's a great point. Right, yeah, when you have mindless foot soldiers. And that's what makes this
so... Like Billy doesn't matter. He's just one of them.
Right. And I think it's funny because what you don't want to do, you know, if you really want to make this dark... maybe it's not Billy. Maybe it's somebody a little more innocent. Because then it's like, I can't just kill Billy if he was like, you know, a sweetheart. You, like if it was Bob Newby, you'd be like, this is terrible. We can't just like, it would be so much more impactful if she was slamming Bob Newby off the wall than Billy, right? Think about how terrifying that would be. But to your point, I'm glad that we're seeing it affecting other people because the answer can't just be like, oh, we got to waste Billy. But we do mitigate that with Max's relationship. That's nice that that's there to create that conflict.
Correct.
We can't just, in other words, my point is you can't just have a bad, evil guy be the bad, evil guy in this scenario where this monster can take people over because then who cares? It's just Billy, right? That's how everyone always feels anyway.
Yeah, that's why, I don't know, I was just going to make a Buffy reference, but I guess I'll let it go.
You let it go? You let that ship sail in the night?
Well, it's just, so there's a season of Buffy and there's like the bad guy and the bad guy's Glory, but she switches with like a normal human, right?
Right.
So Glory is the bad guy, but you can't kill Glory. She's essentially God. She's using a human's body from day to day. And the human actually exists and is real and has a personality. And like, spoiler alert, if you're ever going to watch Buffy, Giles kills this human who is a good person, but you have to kill him or Glory's never going to die. And basically it's this normal person who like was not involved and never did a bad thing. And Giles is just like, sorry, bro, I'm going to have to kill you. Bye. It's a really good episode.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's an intense type of writing.
Exactly. Like right. It's meaningful where you're like, well, I've got to do this thing because I have no other choice,
right.
Even though I'm literally killing like a good person.
Right. And I'm not suggesting Billy isn't meaningful at all. I'm not. I'm just saying.
I mean, we're just suggesting he's not a good person.
Yeah. He yes, correct. He is a flawed individual for sure. But it's cool to see the group. And maybe the plan is to have one of these people pop up at an inopportune time. You're like, holy shit, they have been affected. Or one of the kids realizes somebody's infected that they thought they were close to. I think that would be really interesting. But then again, it's almost like we kind of have done that with Will.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So it's like we don't want to go back there.
Yeah. You're just repeating a storyline. You have to do something a little different.
Got to do something a little different.
I think the different thing is now the Mind Flayer has an army and not just Will.
Right. And it's an army of your fellow townspeople that you can't just mow down with Kalashnikovs.
Correct.
Right. You have to figure out a more intelligent way to win, so to speak.
Correct.
How do you beat the adventure, essentially? But yeah, I liked this week's episode. I thought it was good. It was interesting. I didn't think anyone behaved out of character that much. And even though last week had more interesting reveals and it had that standout scene of that guess who's coming to dinner moment.
Oh, so good.
But this is probably a better episode overall. Like just structurally, writing, character behavior, overall, I think I have way less complaints. I'm way higher on this episode overall than I am on the last episode, even though there's a couple parts in the last episode
that I think
are just better than the best parts of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is just more...
As a whole,
a better piece of TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to next week. I'm looking forward to The Flayed, season 3, chapter 5, as we continue to march our way out there. And the kids now are like, holy shit, the Mind Flayer is back. I like the idea of, did we lock him in with us? Cool.
Great idea.
Great idea.
Scary.
Absolutely.
Scary.
No wonder he's pissed off. He's like, well, I guess I'll just take over this town.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
You ain't got anything else to do.
You pink bellies and your stupid chimpanzee brains, you're all mine.
Whoa.
That's what he's thinking.
Whoa.
Yep, I talked to him. I interviewed him.
Did you?
Yeah, I had to put the little blackout thing on him and change his voice. He didn't want to, you know, he was very protective of his identity. And I said, what are you doing? He's like, I'm taking over the town of Hawkins.
Ew, I didn't like that voice at all.
That's how he talks in my mind.
It was upsetting.
Yeah. Well, sorry. That's
not
what I do.
Lie.
Sometimes I do voices.
I know. Trust me. I fucking know.
Well, I think I've said what I need to say about the sauna tests, and I think we're out of here. So why don't you tell these wonderful people goodbye, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Goodbye, wonderful people.
Goodbye, wonderful people. Thank you very much for tuning in to another edition of the Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. Don't forget to visit us on the web at LiveryStreetGeek.net. That's LiveryStreetGeek.net.